Welcome to Season 3 of Fresh Growth, a podcast by the Western SARE program. That's Sustainable Agriculture Research and Education. I'm your host, Steve Elliott, alongside co-host Stacy Clary. Just for background, Western SARE promotes sustainable farming and ranching across the American West through research, education, and communication efforts like this podcast. It is funded by the U.S. Department of Agriculture's National Institute of Food and Agriculture. Fresh Growth introduces producers and ag professionals from around the West who are embracing new ways of farming and ranching. They'll tell us about their experiences adopting more sustainable agricultural practices and challenges and benefits they've seen. Today's guests are Zach Thode and Elizabeth Black. Zach manages a large cattle ranch in Livermore, Colorado. Elizabeth is an artist in Colorado and manages a Christmas tree farm. Elizabeth is also the project leader for the Citizen Science Soil Health Project, partially funded by Western SARE Grant, and Zach is a producer participant in that project. The Citizen Science Soil Health Project is a grower-driven project which uses the collective knowledge of diverse participating growers to apply local solutions to soil health implementation conundrum. Zach and Elizabeth, welcome and thanks for sitting down with us.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Hi, Zach. As a start, it would be helpful for us to hear a description of your area in Colorado and just some details about your operation.
Okay. I live and operate in Livermore, Colorado, which is a very small community with no town necessarily on along Highway 287 between Fort Collins and Laramie. It's historically just been cattle grazing operations with some small irrigated farming operations. We are about 6,000 feet elevation and within 12 miles of the Wyoming border, so a little further north than a lot of the major farming in Colorado. And so that being said, we operate as a cattle ranch with the added value of some irrigated forage crops and irrigated pasture. And so there's a range between 200 and 500 mother cows on the ranch, depending on what time of year it is and if we have outside cows in or not. And those outside cows come in and graze only for the summer. And then there's a herd of cattle that are my own that I operate year round on the ranch. And it's a cow calf operation. So we wean calves and sell them as all natural calves to a feeder once a year. And then we raise some of those heifers on to be breeding stock for future growth and also to sell. The irrigated crops around here are mostly forage. Again, we're pretty far north and a little high in elevation. So there's reliably only about 100 to 110 days of frost-free growing. Sometimes we can do more, sometimes less. And so we're a little limited in how we do things. So we are careful in what crops we grow, and we try a lot of different things to try to improve some of that. This is sloping ground. So that also limits some of our abilities. There's not a lot of really flat ground. And we do seem to find out that we grow more rocks than we like to grow. And so that adds to the challenge a little bit. So that's the general cusp of our operation. And again, I have four little kids, and so they keep things busy.
Did you return to the ranch, or is it relatively new for you?
So I'm a first generation rancher. I grew up to a couple of hippie farmers that grew less than legal crops way back in the 70s and 80s. And we lived next to a lot of cattle ranches in that time, and I liked seeing what they did. So I started working on cattle ranches when I was 9. And then I stayed in the area after going to CSU to get an ag engineering degree and did a number of engineering jobs while I was continuing to come back to operate this ranch and then purchasing some of our own property as well as our own cattle herd. So I'm kind of a random fit.
Sounds perfect, actually. Elizabeth, we'll switch over to you. Zach, we'll get back and talk about your soil health challenges specifically, but Elizabeth, tell us about the Soil Health Project, how it started, how it's going, what you've learned didn't work?
Well, I was really concerned for several years about climate change and kind of got into soil carbon sequestration through the climate change door. And the idea for the Citizen Science Soil Health Project started at, it's actually at a county commissioner's hearing on genetically modified crops that was a very contentious issue in our area. And I was sitting talking to one of the GM growers, and I asked him, you know, haven't you ever tested your soil to show that your farming methods are actually increasing soil health and improving soil health and sequestering carbon? And his answer was, well, you know, even if we had done that, no one would believe us. And so I thought, well, you know, maybe that's something I could do, because maybe people would believe me, because I'm sort of in the middle in that controversy. So I started talking about the project with different people, and the county was already doing some soil testing. So I got a number of technical advisors to help me, local people who were working in that area, NRCS people and stuff, and put together the project with local funding and then a grant from Western SARE. When I started the project up, I was thinking, okay, if I can get 30 growers, I'm doing really well. We're now up to 48 growers. It's a real mix of growers, small organic vegetable growers, larger commodity growers, ranchers like Zach. We've got a couple of golf courses, because that's where a lot of Colorado water ends up. It's a good example of lawns and what can happen with soil health on lawns. We've got a real mix of different kinds of growers in the project.
What specifically happens in the project? What are these growers doing, getting, seeing, learning?
So each grower has committed to test one site for 10 years to collect soil samples from one site for 10 years. We run a free Haney test on that site every year for them, and then also a free PLFA soil test every other year on that site. And then they can test as many other sites as they want, whenever they want, and we can give them a discounted rate on the soil tests. And then we collect all the data, try to give them their test results in a format that they can understand. And then we track that data and can show them how their results compare with their peers, and also how they progress over the years. Does that answer your question?
It does. And now my question to Zach is, tell me about it from your perspective.
So I've been in the Citizen Science Soil Health Program for 2 years now, so two full soil health tests, and it's a good program. I think Elizabeth has done a fantastic job of trying to relate with a wide variety of interested parties, from the farmers to the policymakers to the academics and to the grant writers like yourself. And I really appreciate her hard work in doing so. This is a complex problem with not so simple answers and not so simple maps to how to do things. And so this is a great opportunity for all of us to learn from each other so that we don't all have to fail in our efforts. And so it's been good. I've been doing different levels of cover cropping and soil health projects on this ranch I've been on this particular ranch for 9 years. And we've been doing a lot since I first got here, mostly with some very idealistic goals in trying to do it in a very organic and passive way, and found that that was a complete struggle and nearly impossible to try to go from from a grass hay operation in rocky ground to annual cover cropping with some perennials and really boosting soil health without plowing much because we couldn't because of rocks, and without the help of herbicides and fertilizers. And so slowly over time, we've just learned that this is not an easy thing to do. And we've tried a lot of things and we're getting better.
You know, things are getting better. What have you learned that works? What have you changed in 9 years? And
yeah, so I mean, I'll take it back. Kind of ironic, you know, the world we live in thinks that organic farming probably and soil health go hand in hand. And it was a little bit of an eye opener to me. I want to say 3 years ago, Elizabeth presented some of her results from her earlier data that she had gathered up, and it clearly showed that the soil health in the organic farms was not as good as the soil health in the conventional farms. And that was kind of a bit of an eye-opener to me, recognizing that when you plow the ground as much as those guys have to do to manage weeds and prepare for other crops, it's just so hard on the soil. And that kind of changed my perspective at that point to say, well, I'm not stuck to some certified organic standard. I was just trying to run this in a very passive organic way to see if I could make improvements in the soil without having to put a lot of money into it. And I was just, it was so slow, and recognizing that maybe adding some fertilizer and maybe a little bit of herbicides at small amounts at the right times might help me speed up the process. And so at that point, I kind of switched gears a little bit and started being a little bit more intentional about how I was planting cover crops and how I was managing them and how I was managing my other forage crops, and not being stuck to some kind of a idealistic standard of organic farming or regenerative farming only, but being willing to kind of plug it all together and put all the pieces together and also working with different people on different varieties and different mixtures, and also being somewhat pragmatic about the price of seed and the cost of planting and the cost of managing all of these moving parts. And so slowly we've realized that fertilizers really, really help some of these cover crops go really fast and put much more organic matter into the ground and much more biomass up into the forage so that we can graze it or cut it and harvest it or put it back into the ground. And so kind of not being so stuck to some of these standards has really helped us move forward with that. And again, we live in not level ground and not ground free of rocks. And so those really kind of limit some of the things we do. The value that I have is throughout the growing season, all of my cows are relatively close by. And that's not the case for a lot of livestock producers. So it's hard for livestock producers to integrate livestock into a growing, a summertime growing cover crop. And fortunately for me, I have that ability because the way my operation works, my cows are nearby. And it's a large group of cows, so I can actually have an impact on utilizing livestock in an irrigated crop environment. Whereas if I only had a few cows, I can't get the same impact as I can with a large group of cows, mostly because I just don't have the time to go out and move fence every 15 minutes or every day even. And so I've been able to kind of accelerate some of these things and there's learning along the way. We also do grow some other crops that require some tillage, and you see that the impacts of that in the soil health scores and the soil test results, but they're reasonable and they're overcomable. And I think that's something that a lot of farmers lose sight of, is it's not, you're building soil health not just to always be a steady incline. You do have to make money some years where you need to actually farm your ground and go plant something that makes you some money. And that's okay. If your soil health is strong, it can recover much faster from a tillage operation than if it's at a degraded condition and you're just always tilling it. I think there's a guy in San Luis Valley, Rocky Brennan, and he talks about how quick his cover cropped fields recover from that heavy duty potato growing operation. We don't ever get to that intensity, but still, there's a recognized difference in how quick your soil recovers if you've taken care of it.
Yeah.
That's something to what Zach said.
Please.
One of the things we found that Zach alluded to was that we checked median soil health scores of our organic growers and conventional growers. And when we compared them the first year of the project, they were exactly the same. Our group of organic growers and our conventional growers, they had the same median soil health score. The other thing we found is that our growers generally came into the project with a fairly decent knowledge base about soil health principles. They kind of knew what they should be doing, the kind of broad-based principles that the NRCS puts out about decreasing tillage and planting cover crops and getting more organic matter into the increasing your days of living cover, all those kinds of things. Where they got stuck is the how to do that. Because of here in Colorado, we've got high altitude, limited water, alkaline soil, a short growing season. I mean, it's a hard place to farm. And a lot of the success stories, from California and Pennsylvania just don't apply that well here. So my philosophy has been that the growers in our project, between all 48 of them, are going to be able to figure out the how if they can share information about what has worked for them and different things and what hasn't worked, different things that they've tried that have not worked. So that's kind of what we're focusing is like, okay, how do you do that kind of stuff in the difficult environmental conditions we have here?
And that's something I was interested in, was the sharing part. You have 48 growers. How much interest has there been from growers that are not participants? Are they following what you're doing, asking questions? Have you been able to do any outreach to them, given that it's harder with COVID?
Our planned outreach kind of bit the dust the last 2 years. So we have not had much at all.
Worse than everyone else's.
Yeah, and it's hard too, because these guys are really busy. They don't have a lot of downtime.
Yeah.
Have you been asked questions informally from people? Are they paying attention, even if you didn't have a more formal outreach event? Do you think other growers are paying attention to what's happening, or maybe they've talked to Zach?
Well, I've given a presentation every year at the Soil Revolution Conference here in Boulder, which generally there's about 200 people at that. And it's a mix of growers. Most of the people there are, like the hangers-on, the ag techie, academic, government people. And that's probably the majority of people that attend the conference. But they have been interested in what I've had to say. I've sort of been able to tell them about our group findings so far, what we've found out as a group, just looking at our composite test results.
So same question for you, Zach. Have you been able to share what you've done and what's worked and what hasn't, with colleagues, with other ranchers or producers?
So yes and no. Again, I think to Elizabeth's point and to everybody's point, some peer-to-peer engagement was severely limited in 2020, a little bit limited in 2021. And now at this point, it's kind of fading. But absolutely, there's definitely peer-to-peer engagement. I would say that I'm not responsible for this, but in Larimer County, there was 0% cover cropping as of 4 years ago. And now there's probably 10% of the farmers that have incorporated some cover cropping and some actual standard or intentional soil health projects on their farms. And that's new. And that's not necessarily my doing or Elizabeth's doing or anything. Some of that is coming from a lot of different places. And I think, to Elizabeth's credit, a lot of her influence goes probably up instead of out, which is okay because policymakers hear what she's doing and hear the data. And when they go back to the people that are farming on publicly owned property and say, hey, look, here's what's working, I think that that information does get to the people that need to hear it. It might kind of go up and then out and then back down rather than just peer to peer. And same in my environment, but there's also a struggle in Colorado. And this is, Elizabeth and I have had this conversation, but Colorado is a purple state as purple goes, and it's relatively politically divided right on the line of ag producers versus their city cousins. And it's kind of an interesting dance to try to figure out how to engage and influence peers in that regard, especially from a policymaker's perspective, that not all of the farmers trust policymakers, and not all of the farmers are, even if they like the idea, they're not willing to just jump up and down and run out and do it because they feel like that's giving credence to something that they don't believe in. And it's a challenging dynamic to be in the middle of that, which I think is extremely important in society to try to bring some of those bonds together rather than standing in isolation. That conversation could drift a long ways. I'll just leave it like that.
You're talking about building bridges and bring people together. How were you able to do that, and how successful has that been, do you feel?
Well, the thing that I have found is that it takes a long time to build trust. And so, I mean, a lot of the growers in our area, I'm sure it's the same all over the West, they've got these earnest young people who come in who are going to work as the agronomist for the NRCS or the soil conservation district manager, and they stay there for a year, a couple years, and then they move on to a new job. And so it's like growers get tired of training these people and interacting with them, and it's like, okay, well, how long are you going to hang around? So a lot of it is sort of, it helps that I'm old, I think, and that I've lived here a while. And it's a process, and it's been 3 years. I'm slowly starting to get some trust. And part of what I do is that has to do with that question you just asked. Like when I go out and take soil samples, I try to get to talking, pick up the soil samples from my growers. I try to get to talking with them, and someone might mention that they're thinking about cover crops. And I say, well, you really should talk to this guy because he's the expert on it. And like, you know, another grower was saying that he had a hard time with cover crops. And I said, well, you really should talk to Zach, you know, Zach Thode, because he knows about that stuff that you're interested in. So that's what I see my job as, is trying to, you know, find out what different people are really good at and then connecting them with each other so that they talk to each other.
Right.
One thing reading your report, Elizabeth, I liked that you made the point that things take time in agriculture, that things don't change quickly. And from a grower's point of view, you've got a crop a year. I mean, so to implement something new really is a one-year timeline. And if it doesn't work, you try it again next year, but the weather conditions are different, or you didn't get enough rain. I mean, something changes. So it's really hard to move things quickly. And it sounds like you've incorporated that learning into this, that maybe it didn't happen as quickly as you had hoped at the beginning, but you've recognized this is a 10-year process project, and it's a longer process than that.
Yeah.
So let me, to Elizabeth's credit, one of the tricky things in trying to add value to improving soil and improving agricultural production is farmers really, really don't like somebody from the government or somebody from the city to come out to their farm and tell them how to farm. Mm-hmm. They look at that as an attack, somewhat of an insult, and they don't trust that person anyway. And Elizabeth has never, ever gone to anybody's farm and told them how to farm. She just collects the data from their farming operations and lets the data speak for itself. And that's much, much more received than somebody showing up on my farm and saying, hey, you need to quit spraying, or you need to quit plowing, or you need to do all these things, because that comes across as a strong insult and non-empathetic. And in this day and age, it doesn't work.
Yeah.
And so Elizabeth has let our own data speak for itself and done a very good job of compiling data in a manner that it can paint a picture without having to put a lot of opinions with it.
Yeah, but Zach, one of the downsides of that, I mean, you're one of the people that can look at that soil test and figure it out. And about half of our growers can, but the other half of them are having a really hard time doing that. And so we're trying to figure out how we could give them a very short, focused recommendation that would be in addition to the soil test, you know, and hopefully they would take it, you know, like, okay, this is free and you get what you pay for and you can choose to ignore this if you want to, but this is what we think we could recommend, you know, based on these test results and your growing methods.
How do you see that possibly working, given what Zach said about somebody coming and saying, do this, and you're saying we could give recommendations? Who would that we possibly be?
It would be me, and I mean, I'm pretty limited. I'm not a soil scientist. You know, I'm much more of a gardener than a farmer. And that's why I don't tell my farmers what to do, because I don't know what to do. But also a woman named Vanessa, who is in charge of the local soil conservation district, and another woman who is soil health specialist for Boulder County Parks and Open Space. And what we were thinking is maybe the three of us could get together and try and figure out a recommendation that we could give a grower to go with their soil test. Part of the problem is that we're still also figuring out how to interpret soil health. The three of us are trying to figure out how to interpret soil health tests ourselves. This is fairly new to all of us. And so we don't have the length and breadth of experience that someone like who runs a soil health lab would have. You know, someone like Rick Haney or Lance Gunderson.
So you mentioned thinking about how to add some recommendations for the folks that are having a harder time just reading the report. Where else do you see the project going over the next few years as you keep going?
We've seen all our data all together. You know, we have, like this last year, we had 130 different soil samples that we added to our database. And with all our data together, we're able to see trends. But when we look at individual growers' data, we're seeing a lot of variability. We've seen a pattern in that. The pattern that we've seen is that our poor soils tend to be fairly stable and we don't see much variability in them. Our better soils are where we start seeing a lot of bounciness in some of our scores. And it's really hard to figure out. We need to analyze that further, look at that more, and try and figure out how we can, you know, whether more time will give us better, more stable data. Or whether it's sampling methods or something else that we're doing, we've got to figure that piece of it out, because there is a lot of variability there. My main goal is to, at the end of this, have a number of people in the community, growers who are themselves soil health leaders and who peers will go to and ask for advice and, you know, will be recognized as good sources of information for people who want to improve their soil health. So that's where I hope to get to.
I was just going to ask Zach, where do you hope this goes on your ranch?
In regards to my own operation, this is an effort to always make improvements, no matter what the condition is. The improvements need to be sustainable and objective and financially sufficient and socially acceptable too. And whether that happens, you know, as a part of Elizabeth Citizens Soil Health Project, or if it's something that we just continue to do on our own, that is going to happen. I expect that every year we'll try something new and we'll see how it works. And we will learn something from that, and we will apply it the next year, and we will apply it to our efforts in the community. As we was mentioned earlier, farming operates in crops, and crops operate on an annual basis. Typically, maybe there's two crops in a year, but mostly one year at a time. And so soil health education by trial and error is an extremely slow process. And the results from the efforts a year ago are just now being shown. And now you have to make a decision for what you're going to do in the following year. So you're always maybe 2 years behind your activities. And so knowing what works and what doesn't work is a bit anecdotal at best, and maybe less than scientific, but it still helps, and it helps neighbors. I will add a little bit to this picture. I'm on the Conservation District Board for now Larimer County, and I am looking at this from a local producer's perspective and saying, how can we utilize good practice to get more financially sustainable farming going in the county so that we meet multiple objectives? And those objectives are sustainable farming, but also our municipal partners are looking for improved nutrients in the rivers, improved air quality, improved water quality, improved open space view sheds. And so I think we can achieve a lot of these things if we start to incentivize farmers to do it, but we need to be slow and methodical about it, because if you just start incentivizing farmers to do practices like cover crops or like no-till or like reduced till or like nutrient management, you have to kind of have a plan on how that works and what works and what doesn't, and what crops work and what crops don't, and what kind of precision agriculture you need to incorporate, and what kind of impacts they're going to have throughout the life cycle of that practice. And we're looking at it and saying, how, if we can establish some of these best practices that are backed by on the ground data, like what Elizabeth is collecting, then it's simpler to start accepting those best management practices and moving them into the field and saying, yes, this is why we do this, is it shows improvements. And then our partners in the municipalities can utilize some of that benefit to their advantage, like nutrient trading in a river, so they don't have to spend so much money to improve their wastewater treatment plant. The farmers can reduce some of the nutrients on the river just by doing better practices that then kind of help pay for those practices. So I see it in a bigger light than just my own, but it's fun to also learn on my own and figure it out. And I have a different perspective to farming than most generational farmers. I don't have a grandfather or a father that's going to roll over in his grave if I don't do something the way he did it, and I don't do it on the day he did it. And that's a big struggle for a lot of farmers in my generation, that it's hard to make changes in an operation, because grandpa might come out of the grave and thank me on the rear end for doing that. And it's a hard thing for those guys to do. And I have that benefit of not having that in over my head.
Yeah.
Zach, you just really laid out kind of a vision that you have for the area. And then both you and Elizabeth have a very clear plan and thinking very realistically about it takes time to make these changes, to build the trust, to gather the data. I really appreciate you taking the time to talk to us both about your operation, Zach, and then both of you on the bigger picture of how the project is going in Colorado. So thank you very much for joining us.
Thanks.
You're welcome.
All right. Have a great day. Okay. Thanks a lot.
All right.
You Thanks, too. Both of you. We'll be following up. Bye.
Thank you for listening to Fresh Growth. We hope you enjoyed this episode. For more information on Western SARE grants and our learning resources, visit westernsare.org.